Thanks for listening to the show. Join us online at playvolutionhq.com and learn how to support the show at explorationsearlylearning.com/support.
It's time to lean back and buckle in. This ain't your grandma's early learning podcast. Then again, your grandma probably didn't know what a podcast was. Hey, moms and dads, puppies and kittens, caregivers and advocates, it's time for Shaking Bones. Here's Dan and Amy.
Hi there. Welcome to the Shaking Bones podcast. I'm Dan Hodgins.
And I'm Amy Avila.
In this episode, we're going to talk about what makes a good teacher slash provider. Amy and I are hanging out together to tackle the untouchables. Sometimes we might challenge your beliefs and maybe even stretch your comfort zone. And most importantly, though, we want to make you think. We don't necessarily expect agreement or disagreement, but what we do hope is to cause some shaking bones. You know, Amy, just recently, you were recognized by an organization, well-deserved, for your expertise in the field. Talk a little bit about that, would you?
Sure. A couple weeks ago, I was one of 50 early childhood professionals who were recognized by the Terry Lynn Lokoff Child Care Foundation. And they've partnered with Children's Tylenol to create the National Child Care Teacher Awards. And Dan, it was such an amazing experience. First off, when you are recognized as one of the 50 award winners, they fly you to Philadelphia and you have an opportunity to meet with all of the other winners. You get a chance to meet the Lokoff family, who are just phenomenal. They so understand and get the importance of child care. And from very early on, a lot of the people who were recognized are infant toddler teachers. They only recognize programs that function year round and that are full-time programs. So it's really based upon child care teaching, not just like, you know, not preschool programs or Head Start or some of that, those other programs that tend to get a lot of recognition, and not a lot of recognition, but more so than child care providers. And the foundation was actually started by this family. The Lokoffs, their daughter, Terry, was killed at the age of 25 in a tragic car accident. And they took this tragedy. She was an infant toddler caregiver. And they decided that was her passion and that's what she was doing. And so they decided to do what they could to continue to promote early childhood and child care professionals. And it grew from just recognizing people locally to now that they recognize people nationwide. And there were actually a couple of winners from child care facilities at military bases as well. Someone flew in from Italy and I think it was Japan. One of the winners came from as well, who were working on military bases. But they give you this absolutely wonderful experience in Philadelphia, and they give you a $500 bonus for the teacher's personal use, and they give a $500 grant towards a project that you're going to implement in your program as well as part of it. So it was pretty phenomenal. And like I said, just the experience to be with all of the other early childhood professionals was just, it was a whirlwind, but it was an amazing experience.
You know, and Amy, it's so well deserved. I'm so happy that you received this kind of recognition, because as you indicated earlier, that there is more opportunity sometimes for half-day preschool or federally funded programs, but the people sometimes who are doing it all year and all day isn't often recognized. So I'm really thrilled that you were able to get this kind of opportunity. Which leads be into, not necessarily what the criteria was, because about how you received this award, but as I looked at you receiving this recognition and then looked at Facebook and saw lots of people looking for staff, and the common thread was, I'm not sure what I'm looking for, I'm not sure how to get the good person that I want in my program. So I thought what we might lead into is maybe some looking at what we consider some of the qualities that make a good teacher and provider. One of the things I want to start with is a whole personal belief kind of thing, which is part of the reason it's so hard to find somebody, because it's relating to this personal belief, I believe. And that means, does the person have a personal belief on what's important for children? And I think that that's an important component to finding the start. What does this person believe about children? Do you think this is important, Amy?
I do, but I also think it's hard because, you know, that's one of the top questions that I think that people will ask. Well, what do you believe about children, or what do you know about young children? And I think it's just there are so many things that I believe and I know about young children. And so, you know, as a director, if you're going to ask that type of question, it's really like, whoa, you know, it's a really hard question to answer unless you've got like 3 days to sit and talk about it, But I do think it is something very important, you know, to consider.
Well, and maybe the question really should be more, give me three things that you think are the most important part of childhood. And I think part of the component of this, though, is even more important, is what practices do you believe reflect, you know, what you believe? Because I think sometimes when we hire good people or not, that sometimes the belief and the practices don't match.
Right. And I think it's when it's not your own program,
right,
when, you know, because I've worked for people before I had my own program. When it's not your own program, sometimes it's really hard to get the beliefs and the practices to mesh. So, of course, as a director, you want to be really clear about what your program's values are and make sure that the person that you're bringing in fits with what you believe and what the values of the program are, so that the beliefs and practices can mesh. And sometimes a program's overall beliefs and practices don't match as well. So, you know, in terms of what you're looking for bringing someone in, sometimes you can get a lot of really good feedback from new people coming in about bringing some of that to light for you as well.
Right, because I'm thinking, if, for example, a person you were interviewing said that I believe play is essential for young children, and then your next component of that is, well, what kinds of practices do you think would support play? And the person said, I'm just off the wall, but did some crafty kind of things. That would be an example to me of a person who knows what you think you want to hear, but then when you put the practices together, it doesn't necessarily match in terms of that. Because to me, play and crafts, continual crafts for young children, would not be a match in my program and probably yours.
Right. And I have such a hard time, because I really don't think that a traditional interview process is the best way to find out whether or not people are going to be the best fit for your program. Of course, you need to have it to like weed people out and to figure things out. But really, a working interview and having an opportunity, because there are people who are absolutely articulate and they're phenomenal. They'll tell you what you think you want to hear, but then you put them in a room with children and forget it. And then there are people who have a lot of anxiety talking with adults, and they will come in and you'll ask all the questions and like, oh my gosh, this person is not going to be, you know, I don't think this person is going to be great at all. But then you put them in a room with the children and you're like, they are completely in their element and this is going to be the best teacher that I'm ever going to have. And so, you know, I struggle a lot with how to balance that, because a lot of people who are phenomenal with children are not great with adults.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that's okay. As long as that person fits into, your program and can support and enhance, cause I'm not necessarily a believer that you have to be all, but I do think that there are adults in our programs that reflect qualities that we need. And that it doesn't necessarily mean that I or you have to have all of them, because I don't. But I do think it's important that we have a common core of agreement of what's important.
Right. And, you know, Dan, I was trying to come up with a list myself before we had this discussion so that I could kind of go through. And some of the things that I was thinking about, you know, where you're talking about what's important for children. I like the idea of someone of teachers who listen more than they talk. Something that I was told a very long time ago is there's a really good reason why we have two ears and only one mouth. So, you know, an adult who can sit back and really listen to the children rather than speaking as much to give children the opportunity. I think that's a really important piece.
I agree definitely that the listening component is, and I think that, again, I'm not sure the interview process, I agree with you. It's almost more of a screening process, that the working relationship really is more important in terms of the component. And I did the same thing you did. I wrote down some things that I would be looking for. And I think flexibility is another component. And when I mean flexibility, I'm not talking about just the hours and the things that might occur. I'm also looking at whether or not an adult would allow a child to change what they have planned, because I think that's a crucial component, because it says a lot to me. First of all, the idea that they have made lots of plans bothers me. But the other component of that is, if I did decide I wanted to introduce something in this space with children and they decide to change it, to me, that would be a really good quality in an individual. What do you think?
Yep. Flexibility was the second one on my list. definitely, you have to be flexible with young children, because you never know what is going to happen or what their needs are going to be that day. And, you know, you can have fantastic, grand ideas of what might happen. And it's important for you to kind of think about some of the scenarios that might happen. But 9 times out of 10, what's going to happen is something that you didn't think of. And most of the time is 1,000 times more wonderful than anything you could have thought that the children would do, because children are so, you know, creative and they pull things and they make them their own. But if you're too rigid and not able to be flexible and to trust the children and to follow their lead, you know, you're going to have a really hard time and the quality of that classroom is going to go down.
Yeah. Another one I put down was does not take things personally.
Definitely.
Can you imagine if this person, you know, when a child comes up and says you're fat and get all heartbroken, or a parent questions them over a strategy they use, because we're pretty open in this field. We're open to families. We're open to children. We're open to the community. So if we're an individual who tends to take things really personally, you're going to be hurt a lot in this field. Don't you think so?
Oh, definitely. I mean, children are, children don't have any filter. And that's one of the great things that I absolutely love about working with them is you don't ever have to worry about whether or not they're going to be honest because they'll tell you. they'll tell you. And so you have to be able to, take everything with a grain of salt and to be able to of course defend your practices and that type of thing. But again, not taking it personally, but being able to back up why you're doing what you're doing. So,
Yeah, definitely. What's another one on your list?
I have a facilitator versus a teacher on the list because I think of the old standard model of education where the teacher is just like spewing information that everybody's supposed to absorb. And whereas, really in a quality classroom, the teacher is the facilitator. Again, they're listening more than they're talking, which is what I said before, but they're watching and they're observing so much more than they're actually spewing information. And so they're paying attention to get the materials that someone might need, and they're there to meet the needs of whatever the children may be that day.
Yeah, I agree. I think that kind of it's more like the encourager rather than the discourager in terms of
Right.
that approach. Yeah. Another one that I have is that the be a good observer. And I think that goes along with the one that you just had. I think but I really think it's more important that we are capable of observing what children need and then base our practices on what we've observed rather than what we think happened in terms of that approach.
I definitely agree with that, Dan. And I think it's really important for us to hone in our observation skills to go below the surface because a
Yes.
lot of times people think that they're great at observing and they may see what's going on the surface, but they don't really take the time to really like analyze and think about what the needs of the child are based upon that observation. I think a lot of times, like, they see a lot of children playing with. They might see children playing with trucks and be like, oh, we need more trucks. And really, the child was really interested in lining those trucks up. So it wouldn't
Right.
necessarily be the trucks, but having lots of materials to line up. So I think it's really important, to really take those observations to a deeper level.
One of the programs I visited there, when you talked about a working interview, one of the things that they had people do is they would come in, and the first thing that they did was to had to observe and take notes, and then report back to what they thought children wanted after their observation, which I thought was a fascinating experience because it brings out what you talked about. Because it could, what they've observed might not necessarily be in coexistence with what the child really needs in some cases. It's more of a projection rather than what's underneath of that component. So I saw that as a really important part of hiring somebody is whether or not they've got good observation opportunities.
Yeah. We both have a little bit of cough going on today.
Of what's going on with that. The other one I had was being a good guardrail rather than a disciplinarian, and I always use the word guardrail as a chance to that doesn't mean that there aren't boundaries, but with that we're there to make sure that children don't get hurt, and that the guardrail is there to not tell children what to do, but here is what I'm going to do to make it safer for you to do. So I sometimes like to know what people view as safe and unsafe in terms of that risky play experiences. What do you think about that?
Oh, definitely. A lot of the best learning experiences for young children are when we allow them to step just a little bit outside their comfort zone. And I think it's really, really important. And sometimes as adults too, for us to be able to say, okay, how can we make this happen in a way that they're not going to get, that a child is not going to get seriously hurt, but still allow them to take those risks. So definitely.
And what's another one on your list?
I have always learning. I think it's really important that for a quality provider or teacher is always learning, not just, you know, they're reading, they're researching, they're talking to other providers, you know, they're making connections with other people in the field, but they're also always learning from the children and just, you know, always looking for ways to continue to better themselves and make more opportunities for the children through what they're learning.
Yeah, because I can't imagine anybody saying I know it all. If I did hear that, I'd be a little concerned about that individual. So I think you're right in terms of that process, because in this field, children are not the same. We don't want them to be the same. The families that we work with are different. So, and the research changes based on what the focus is. So I think it's important that we keep up to date and that we look carefully at what's available and making sure that we want to continue that learning process. I think that's a real important component of being a good teacher. Another one that I put is accepts, not loves. What I mean by that is lots of people, and you and I've talked about this before, is people will say, I want to become a teacher or provider because I love all kids. But that already puts me at a thinking, oh my God, how is that possible? in terms of that process, I'm more interested in, I don't care if they necessarily love the children. It's a nice feature, but I'm more interested in whether or not they're accepting of children and their differences and their abilities and their strengths and areas of growth and all of that and component. And I think I've noticed that our list, which is really interesting because they're very similar, but also the fact that they're not something that you necessarily pick up in a class.
Right.
You know, you're going to college or university or high school or whatever. These are components that aren't necessarily class driven.
And, you know, Dan, I think there are a lot of things in terms of what, you know, my background, my degree is in psychology. I don't have an education degree. And for some quality programs and you know, quality rating programs and things, that makes a big difference if you have the right degree. But in reality, a lot of times, I think some people are just born to work with young children. I think there's to do something with personality. And I truly believe that some people, you know, they're just born to be in this field and, they have the passion for it, and whether or not they have the matching degree to go with it. Sometimes I've found that the assistants that I've had that are parents who've been with our program or, you know, just have a lot of experience working with young children are better than some of the people with the 4-year degrees.
Well, and I think, again, to indicate that one thing is better than something else, to me, is an injustice to the field. So I think it's really important that we consider the fact that a person might not have a degree, the person might have a degree in another area, but to indicate that early childhood is the only component that makes a quality person, to me, is an injustice to the field. Matter of fact, what I wrote down as my last component is I wrote down has a large gut, and I don't mean a physical gut, but I mean what you were talking about earlier. I do believe that there are people who, for whatever reason, whether it's innate or environmental, just are better with kids. They just simply have some feelings, some cognition, some approaches that just match perfectly with what children need. And those are not necessarily taught at a college or university or a workshop or training. It's just part of who they are. And I think in reality, that's all who we're looking for, is somebody that really just kind of knows it naturally. Does that make sense?
Yep. And, you know, like you said, you know, it could be people with degrees. And honestly, if you find that this is a field where you are, you know, where you are, then continue to learn, continue to grow. And whether or not you have the degree or you're self-taught or, you know, where it comes from, being able to continue to better yourself, will continue to, improve things for the children as well.
Yes, yeah, so as we put an end to this, I think it's really crucial. It's hard to hire an individual in this field through an interview process alone. So we're really going to have to evaluate that process, and it might be involved in some other components. Thanks so much for letting us shake some bones. Again, I want to congratulate Amy on her recognition. If you have questions or want continued discussion, you can email me at dkj5075@aol.com or Amy at
You can email me at amyahola@hotmail.com, or you can find me on Facebook. And if you are or you know another amazing early childhood teacher or caregiver, I really would encourage you to visit www.tllccf.org and get some more information on the Terry Lynn Lokoff Child Care Foundation and how you can get information to this educator that you know, or be it yourself, to potentially be recognized next year as one of their 50 Child Care Teachers of the Year.
That's great, Amy. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
This has been Shaking Bones. Dan and Amy will be back next week for more Bone Rattling. Stay tuned.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.